DIP friends, I'm pretty sure you've seen the video where a lady was talking about how the Chinese have flooded our Nigerian market with adire and asoke not made from Nigeria. Now, Mr. Anosa also posted another video on LinkedIn and also on our IP community group where he stated asoke weaving upgrade. So now they are using tech-enabled tools to weave our adire and asoke and are now going to import it into our Nigerian market. So on today's episode, we're going to be talking about a topic that might surprise you, which is the dark side of creativity. Yes, you heard me right. Creativity is not always a positive force in the world. Sometimes it can lead to unethical behaviors such as counterfeiting and piracy, which are considered to be serious crimes that violate intellectual property rights and also harm the original creators, the consumers, the society at large, the custodians of cultural expressions such as indigenous people, artists, and innovators. Then you may ask, why do these creative people engage in such illegal activities and how can we prevent them? Now, to answer this question, I have invited a guest to talk to us about counterfeiting, piracy, and the dark side of creativity.
Welcome to IP series, home to all things IP related, where I give you the stories, tips, and implications to business and creative decision concerning your intangible assets with real life case study. I am your host, Rita Anwori Chinda. Subscribe and turn on your notification so you don't miss an episode. Cheers, guys.
To answer all the questions that I listed in my little story, I have invited an expert on this topic. So let's welcome Ifeanyi. Please tell us your name, where you're based, and what you do for a living.
I'm Ifeanyi Emmanuel Okonkwo, and I'm a lawyer and IP expert, Senior Associate and Deputy Head of Sector at Jackson Etienne Edu. And I do intellectual property and commercial law for a living.
Fantastic. It's a pleasure having you here. So I'm just going to get right into our conversation, which is, what is IP or what is intellectual property and why is it important for innovation and economic growth?
Yeah, so the word intellectual property is a coined word, right? It's a coined word or an umbrella used to encapsulate various genes. And you can say that it is a word used to describe creative creations. And it's an umbrella. It covers both other genes of intellectual property like copyright, industrial property, trade secrets, patents, and all that. So basically, that's what it is. Now, why is it important for innovation? So many years ago, I think that was in 2004, it was Bill Gates who said that over the last 10 years, it has become imperative for CEOs and managers of business to, you know, not just have a general understanding of intellectual property, but also to understand the issues around it and how it can be used, you know, to resolve issues and innovate thrive businesses. So the importance of intellectual property is without creations, right? Without creations, you find out that businesses, even the society, may not be able to grow what, how did we get to where we are? Back in the days when we were probably in the village before civilization, we were probably stuck in maybe trade by barter, food from the soil, and that's all. And then people begin to create, right? People begin to say, oh, why do we have so much darkness? Can we have light? And then light was created. People begin to think at the, you know, new ways of doing things. People begin to ask questions. Why do people have to die? What is this sickness? What is it about? What can be used to cure it? People begin to create remedies, solutions. And so we can say that when we create, and that is what intellectual property is all about, when we create, we are innovating. And these innovations bring progress, development to the society in turn. And that's why, that's the link between intellectual property, innovation, and economic growth.
Wow, you took us down the memory lane right now, and I appreciate you for that. So in the course of defining what IP was, you mentioned types of IP. Can you expand more on the main types of intellectual property rights and how do we protect the creators and owners of this intellectual property?
So the main types of intellectual property includes copyright, and then we have the what we call the industrial property. And industrial property covers patents, designs, and trademarks, basically. There has been some argument that plant variety should also fall under, you know, under that limb, but nevertheless, we also have other types of recognized intellectual property rights, like trade secrets and confidential information. These are basically the various types of IP. Copyright definitely will be dealing with those kind of creations or work that the law has, you know, deemed eligible for copyright. And those would normally include your literary works, when you write, even your computer programs that you write, just that expression itself is a literary work. And then you have musical work, when you compose music, you have the sound recordings, you know, that come from it, like most of this music we hear. You have the artistic works, just as the name implies. You have the audiovisuals, you know, call it films if you like, and then broadcasts. And that's for that. And then patent has to do with invention. When you're talking about patent, you're talking about, but what it is, you know, is actually a legal right, some sort of document that the government gives to someone who has been able to invent something new in the society. And, you know, the law says, oh, for doing this, we are here is some letters of patent acknowledging what you have done and giving you the right to the exclusive use and exploitation of this invention. Please use it as you like, make money from it for a period of 20 years, after which we hope that your invention will be shared to the society and for, you know, more improvement and development of the society. So basically, that's what patent is. Design is the same thing. The only difference is why patent mostly has to do with some of the functional aspect, right, or processes. Design is merely about aesthetics, right? You talk about the aesthetics of the new Tesla driving car, that design itself. Or you talk about the Coca-Cola bottle, right? The way it was couched, that new bottle, that's a design. It's all about the aesthetics, the lines and all that. But it has to be unique, not having been there before. And then you have the trademarks, basically. What the trademark is any sign that you've developed or used as associated with your goods or services, and you want everybody to be known to know your business when they look at that matter. Ah, oh, this is from USC. Oh, this is from Apple. This is from Coca-Cola. So that is what a trademark basically means. It can be a word. It can be a logo. It can be even a signature. And that is, the law is saying, okay, we want you to protect this so that it can serve as a badge for your products and services. People can trust it. And if anything happens, people can hold you responsible. And that's the whole idea. And so the law is saying, let no other person use either this mark or anything very similar to it as to cause confusion, so that we can, you know, hold proprietors responsible. They themselves can also enjoy the benefit of the quality of their work and services. That's basically the various genes of IP.
What are the current and emerging threats of counterfeiting and piracy to intellectual property in Nigeria and globally? And I'm asking this because of the viral video the video that went viral a few weeks ago regarding the Adire being mass produced in, was it China, I think? But yeah, basically that's where the foundation of this question is coming from.
Oh, I see. So the emerging threats, as far as counterfeiting is concerned, goes way beyond the textile industry and you know, fabrics and all that. Currently, I mean, it has affected certain, you know, industries. You look at the pharmaceuticals, you look at the packaged foods, you look at footwear, or even then clothwear, which then falls within what you are asking. There's also cosmetics, alcohol, but there's even jewelry. But I think the most, the two basic one that is quite rife and that is really, really affecting Nigeria is for software as well as the clothing industry. And when I say clothing, I mean both clothes and footwears. So what has happened was when the Adire has been with us for over centuries, right? And it's typically connected to the Western part of the world, and there are a lot of family in the Yoruba culture that lives. Their source of livelihood is, you know, connected to the making of these adires. And adire got very popular way back, even when Nigeria was still under the colonial masters. And so you could see even during the in Nigeria, adire was also part of those coloring, cultural colorings of, you know, the videos and the activities of way back. With the experience these people got, they passed and handed over this tradition and knowledge of making the adire from generation to generation. But what has happened is that because in Nigeria, we do not have certain policies or at least even protective measures. And also there's also the issue of ignorance of intellectual property. Most of our traditional knowledge are exposed to the world, right? And when you expose these things on YouTube, on various websites, it attracts foreign eyes and they see some money in it. There's money to be made, right? And what do they come? They come in here, they steal the tradition and knowledge, and then they go back there and recreate it. And most times they bring it back to us because Nigeria is mostly a consuming country than a productive country. So they bring it back to us for consumption. And this is sad because we are now losing a lot of money. It's a serious threat because we are losing money from this. Imagine what we were getting from this before now. And Now, a lot of people are also out of job. There's a serious threat. In fact, there was a viral video of one of the descendants of the known makers of the Adire, and then she was calling the world to, you know, to search their conscience and you know, find a way to avoid the China's production of the that form of Adire. And sadly, that's the best she can do. And one would wonder if she knows, because of we do not even have traditional knowledge law in Nigeria, right? And so it's also a bit difficult to, you know, tow towards that lane. But I suppose we can look at the designs. That's why the Designs Act is there. We can look at designs and then see if these designs have actually... But then again, the question would be whether those designs were registered. Were they protected, right? And so these are the major threats of, you know, in counterfeiting in Nigeria and globally, really. Just to say, beyond even the clothing or textile industry, you can see that even in the food, a lot of our trade secrets, you see a lot of new stars who want to be chefs and they want to be known. You then go to YouTube, you see them exposing all our recipes to the world. You say, oh, I have to correct Nigerian jollof rice. And then you're exposing the recipes out there for the world to see. This is supposed to be our own traditional knowledge. It's supposed to be our GI, our geographical indication. But all these things are exposed because of lack of ignorance. And so they are mostly after getting followers and creating useful content that on the other side, we are then exposing most of our, but maybe we do not know. For instance, look at the wine industry. The French and even the Europeans, do you know how much they generate just from wine alone? This thing we call whiskey, this thing we call champagne, just how much they generate runs into millions and billions of dollars, right? And this is what they do, because everybody wants the original champagne, so you want to get from the right source. Because of that, they are exporting this thing at a very massive rate all over the world, and they are generating a lot of income, not only for the community or makers of the wine, but also for the community and then the nation, you know, as a country. But here, when we finish exposing all this, what then do we have to sell? I was in Cape Town the other time, and I saw an Italian who, you know, had a restaurant on Long Street, and part of the selling factor was African food available: Nigerian jollof rice, Ghanaian jollof rice. Did you get? And I was shocked, Rita. I was like, wow. So that caught my fancy. So I went into the restaurant and I was hoping to see some sort of Nigerian chef, you know, and this guy came in and served us. And at the end of the day, he came out, you know, they have very good services in terms of customer relationship. So he comes out and then he says, hope you enjoyed the jollof rice. And, you know, he was trying to get feedback from the jollof. Well, to be honest, it was almost as good, right? It was, on a scale of 10, I would say it was 8.5. So he had really mastered the craft just by studying this. And I told him, I asked him, how did you get to know how to do this jollof rice? And then he said, that there are a lot of this book out there, YouTube, and he has studied them and he has seen them. And I'm like, good for you. I said, maybe you should employ a Nigerian and you know, just to help also perfect the trade. That's all I told him, and then I had to leave, you know. But And there are a lot of Nigerians in that place, right, who are looking for jobs, who may not have one or two things to do, and they can cook. So, I mean, we can go on and on, but it's crazy. And then we are complaining in Nigeria that we do not have enough resources, things are hard. But these are money that we are losing. We are just, you know, we keep losing money every day. And you see how Nigeria is losing money despite we complaining of, you know, poverty, the depletion of our natural resources and lack of money and all that. But really, we are really, really losing money. There's so much opportunities out there, Rita. So much opportunities that intellectual property affords us. Imagine if we stop distributing or exposing our traditional knowledge and our various world, right? If we stop doing this and then we create some sort of policy, let people, imagine if nobody can use jollof rice, right? Out there, we create some sort of GI and then have a mark that shows that this product or these services is coming from the right community that has the expertise or the traditional knowledge over these certain products or services, right? So imagine if we begin to do that, and the whole world will be crazy about the Nigerian jollof. They will keep asking for what's the secret behind it, you know? And look at so many other things like the ofako, that's the banga stew, right? It is a wonderful sell. I recall some time ago when we went to London, there was white people had come to visit, right? And that day we prepared the white rice and the banga stew. After they had it, they're like, oh, no, you must give us some to take home, right? And ever since the wife of the gentleman started, you know, disturbing us so that we could actually teach her how to make the soup. I recall telling my nephew, I said, see, don't teach her. Don't. She's going to take it. She's going to blow and make a lot of money. And you subsequently, you'll be going to a restaurant to eat the ofako. I said, if at all that must be taught, then it should be some sort of agreement. You need to have some shares or equity in that knowledge, you know. Don't just expose that knowledge, right? This is, you know, this is the hope of so many Nigerians out there. And so there is a need for that consciousness for us to educate our people. Both those in the food industry, those in the textile industry, we need to educate them. We need to find ways to protect our intellectual property and stop exposing it. And that is why, because when we expose, what we are doing is that we are fueling counterfeits, right? We are fueling the counterfeiters to continue and to find ways of milking from us.
Wow, very, very insightful views. So what would you say is the economic and social impact of counterfeiting and piracy on consumers, businesses, the government, and the society at large? I know you've alluded to it a bit, but let's just have like a more elaborate conversation.
Yes, thank you, Rita. I think that's indeed, that's a problem that, you know, affects both the ears and the eyes and the hands, you know. It affects everyone. Counterfeit affects everyone. And I'll give you a typical example. Imagine we have, for instance, one of the hot things you can export today. Well, let me say two of the hot things you can actually export today from Nigeria are cashew nut, right? There's a cashew nut, and then there is plantain. By the way, some African countries call plantain big bananas. Yes, they eat it. They got introduced to it by, you know, Nigerian chefs or restaurant owners, and they love it, right? And then they're like, oh, what is it? Can I see what it is? So they bring it out for them, and what they are seeing is the plantain. They say, oh, that's a banana. It's a big banana. So that's where the name probably came from. And so imagine if we have some protective measures around this product, right? The importance of that is that the government can begin to call the entire those who are into the food business on the agriculture sector to say, okay, can we want to empower you to export? Intelligence that South Africans are always in need of plantain. We've gathered in intelligence that cashew nut is mostly needed in the EU countries, right? And then when you make that announcement, you see the farmers and the manufacturers, you see everybody coming, you know, into it. They are empowered and everybody wants to export. Of course, there will be some standard measures, right? These standard measures will be driven by government to make sure that it meets the quality. If it meets the quality, a GI is tagged to that product. And when it's tagged to that product, everyone knows that, oh, this is coming from the right sources. It has the government backing. Imagine what we will be exporting. We would no longer have to depend on oil. We will be exporting most of this based on intelligence of the need in various other countries. When we export this, you are having a whole lot of income coming in, forex, right? And then you are bettering the lives of not just the farmers and the distributors of this product, but also the people, they get to employ more people, families are fed, and this eventually brings money to the government because then people are happy to pay their taxes or their various duties, and the society at large becomes better for it. That is the correlation. But if we don't do these things, when we fail to do these things, what is happening is we are suffering without knowing the cause of the suffering. Perhaps, yes, we might say government, but beyond government, of course, government has a very high role to play on this. But beyond government, we ourselves are somehow our problems. We are not doing certain things that we should do, you know, and maybe it's the gap in knowledge, right? So we are exposing these things out there. We are not protecting them. And then we are fueling the activities of the counterfeits. So in a way, when the counterfeits comes, okay, for instance, there was a case, and I won't mention names because of client confidentiality. There was a case of brand protection. The company has been making a lot of money, right? And then suddenly, Rita, they noticed that there has been a decline in sales, as well as the income that is coming in. And then they had to do some sort of analysis, business analysis, to see where the problem is. When they did that analysis, they found out that, oh, there had been shortage of income from Lagos. There has been also from Onitsha, that's in Anambra State, right? They were able to pin it down and say these two places are where the sales have dropped. And because of that, at the time, they almost had to, you know, do some restructuring, allow some, you know, employers go because of the money wasn't coming in as much, so they can't afford to, you know, be paying much. But then they realized what the problem was, and then they had to engage for some sort of brand protection. And what happened? We found out eventually when we did the market survey that in Lagos, there are at least three different counterfeiters of that product. So you can imagine what we have been buying out there in the market. It's not the right product from the right manufacturers. So what if, what, how do we know that what we are consuming is safe? And so you see a lot of people dying, people suffering from one illness or the other. And most times, like a medical doctor was saying that 60 to 70% of our health problems comes from what we take. And if that is the question, the follow-up question would be, are these products, what we are taking, are they, do they have quality? Are they coming from the right source? What is the quality check behind this product? And so if we have been consuming counterfeits, then of course, we'll be in jeopardy. And it doesn't just end there. You can see the companies are now losing business. So they are now retrenching, sacking some staff, right? And then it affects eventually the company's ability to pay certain returns to the government. Because, I mean, definitely once your income goes down, your tax implication goes down. So these are the issues, you know, and it affects everyone. And then when we even went to Onitsha, we found that one was even crazy because we found out that the counterfeiters are almost taking over the entire market, so that there was even a little part of the original products in that market. Wow. And the retailers were, you know, patronizing these counterfeiters, thinking that it is the same product. And in fact, they were happy because it's cheaper. So that these are the problems, and it affects, you know, everybody, really. It affects everybody.
I do agree with you. Sometimes cheaper isn't the best. But then, looking at our economy, I don't think you blame a lot of people for always going for counterfeited products. So
yes. Just to say something on that. I mean, at various conferences where I've had to speak on counterfeit, I keep telling the manufacturers, associations, and I keep telling business owners that if you don't find a way, you see, and in fact, even in the MBA, there are certain things you learn about pricing. You need to consider the earning capacity of the persons you're making this product for. And in Nigeria, being a developing country, there's much poverty, just like in most African countries, there's much poverty. You do not take the fact that this thing is $20 in the US, and then you push your product down here, or maybe from the EU or anywhere, and then you push your product down there and you expect to still make $20, or maybe you are now making, because of export duties and cost and logistics, you are now putting this at a price of $50. These are people who $20 is even a problem for them, right? And so I think it's a question of balance. If you consider the cost of production right now, it's 10 times higher than what it used to be, Rita. And if you're with these manufacturers or producers, if you sit with them, you see the problems they go through. There is no ease of doing business. And most times, anything that happens to the business, they need to factor in that, you know, price, that factor in the price that they eventually peg to their products. And that is the problem. So because of that, it's now too high for people to afford. And of course, instead of someone, if you can't afford it, you go for the next alternative, right? And this is why the counterfeiters are much in business. That's why it's a booming business. And until the manufacturers find a way to balance the issue of price, people would always continue to patronize counterfeits. But my warning again would be for those, for consumers who patronize counterfeit products. And of course, you would know that these are counterfeit. For instance, you are seeing Gucci. Who told you that you can buy a Gabbana and Gucci products for 4,000 or 6,000? Come off. You know, you yourself, you know it's fake. Yeah, you know it's fake. And you're buying it because, oh, it looks like it. It looks like Gucci. So, okay, let me roll with this, you know, because you can't afford the main Gucci. And we get it. But at least don't try that for food items and health items, like, you know, the medicines we take. So you don't want to try that for that. But then again, there is this recent argument that most of these counterfeiters and what they produce, that the line between the quality, the original quality of from the original manufacturers and what they produce is very slim. And in most cases, or in some cases, there are no hazardous effects to such products. That's the new argument they are throwing in the head now. And I mean, how do we know? There's also the issue of ethics, right? What is morally right? Imagine if someone is doing that to your own product and then puts you out of business. I mean, so these are the issues.
Next question to you will be, what are the negative impacts of counterfeiting and piracy on the original creators and custodians of cultural expressions, such as indigenous people, artists, and innovators?
Yes. So let me just begin with a story. I went to a court. I had a section at court at Ijebu Ode. So I went there. Somebody I had to see who is somehow connected to the case. So I had to go to their house. And when I entered there, I saw there's this big space they had in front of their house where a lot of people are. And I could see, you know, some machines and all that. And I asked, what goes on here? She said, oh, now this is their company. And but it was looking all lonely and, you know, there weren't enough people. And some of the machines were just, you know, hanging there. And I was like, oh, is it still a going concern? And then she said that, well, that the market is no longer what it used to be. And a lot of persons have had to drop. So what people just come is they just come to learn. Maybe those after leaving secondary school, before they find something, they just come to learn. And then they move out from it. And I said, what do you teach? Said they come there and then they learn the beads and the tie and dye, oh no, those various ways of textile making, and told me that, you know, this has been the family business for so many years that had been handed over from, you know, generation to generation. And I felt quite sad because this is a business that is now going into extinction, right? And the reason is because of the old counterfeits out there, they are unable to match the competition. China is bringing in their own, those from the US comes here and they take our fabric and they start selling and even bring it down here. Some people in the EU countries are doing the same. French has followed suit. Even some African countries also, you know, cross promote, you know, other African wares as their own. So it's a problem. And this whole thing is causing serious impact on those original creators of these intellectual properties. And it's a big problem because even It's not going, I don't think it's going to get better because in the last report, as I think even by OECD made a report and it was estimated that in 2022 alone, that there will be over 991 billion loss in just from counterfeit and pirated goods. And of course, this figure is very, very visible if you note if you took cognizance of the 461 billion loss in 2013, you know. So you can see how it keeps increasing. And the funny thing is, despite the sensitization that continues to go on, the figures keep increasing. Counterfeits. They keep finding new ways, you know, into the market to even better their products. So even these counterfeiters, they are also investing. They are also investing in the quality of their act, you know, in their make-believe act. And it's a big problem. Yes, it's a big problem, Rita.
I mean, I did the maths when you were mentioning billions, but billions is a lot of money. And between yes, now between 2013 and 2022, 530 billion. No, thank God. Anyways, let's not even go into the number of billionaires we have because that one is another thing. But then, what would you say are the best practices and strategies to prevent, detect or combat counterfeiting and piracy in different sectors and industries, using Nigeria as a case study and maybe at the international level?
So I've always in most places where I've had to speak on counterfeits, I've always professed something. And the first thing I would say, and I always say, is the pricing issue. There has to be a balance. And I think that is where most of the old fallout comes in. Yes, I know there are always legal and other physical and protective measures that can be put in place. But if we do not address the issue of pricing, then I'm afraid that the counterfeit market is going to really sit on the throne. And the reason is simple. So there is a phone. You've advertised a wonderful phone, and that phone is sold for 50 million, or let's say 50,000, just saying. And someone comes to say, oh, this phone is as good as that one. It does everything that one does. And see, you can buy it for 20,000. Common sense, people will rush for the one for 20,000. And I'll tell you why. Even when they realize that this is not the original phone, even when they know that maybe there's a slight drop in quality, because it makes economic sense to save, they would rather go for that counterfeit. And so the problems of producers and manufacturers is not the consumer, because what you're trying to fight is you're trying to fight common sense. You're trying to fight logic. You will not win in that battle. Where they need to throw, so the old sensitization, oh, counterfeit is wrong. All the old money and billions spent in sensitization around counterfeits is, sorry to say, it's almost a waste of money, right? Because you are not addressing the big elephant in the room. The big elephant in the room is this: I do not have enough finance. And I need this. I need to wear clothes. I need to use a phone. I need to be able to take painkillers if I have a headache or something, you know? And the question is, can I afford yours? I can't afford it. Oh, there's something similar. Will it kill me? The answer is no. They are saying the answer is no, right? Even though in some cases it could kill. And then
That's what they clear program.
so I'm definitely going to go for the cheaper one and buy it. No matter what you say, you know, that's what I'm going to do. because I have so many other bills to take care of. I've not talked of my house rent. I've not talked of, you know, the children's fees. I've not talked of, there's so many things, you know, and there are enough. Of course, you know, in Nigeria, everything continues to increase, the price of everything. And the only thing that never increases is the remuneration.
The salary.
So it's a big problem, and that is what they need to address first. And I'll tell you, if the owners of businesses can find a way to beat price, and to do this, you need to speak to governments of other countries to see. Where the investment should go is how to reduce the cost of exportation and importation. If that is reduced, this custom duties, high custom duties and all that, if all those things are reduced, then the prices can also be reduced, right? If the difference between an original product and a fake product is 10 naira, 20 naira, most people will go for the original one. Because people also have pride and say, oh, I'm using the original stuff. But if the price difference is huge, if there's a significant price difference, then people are going to always go for the counterfeit. And that right there is something they need to solve. And the way around that would be for them to visit those things that makes custom duty or prices high and see how to address those. Until they do a fallback on price, then most of the counterfeiters will run at a loss. Because if eventually they are producing something, even in the most less quality of ways, they would also want to recuperate the cost of production. So that is just one. Then also, we can also look at the issue of technology, using technology to combat these things. So most products that are produced now, they have something called the radio chip frequency that is tied to products. So that way you are able to, you know, use some device to check and see that this is original. People now also have this QR code labeled to their product so that you can check or confirm that it's coming from the right manufacturers. The problem with these measures, however brilliant they are, is that when they come, for instance, you're bringing a bunch of products, you know, from into the border, and of course, you know, there will be thousands of such products. How many custom officers are on ground? How many do you think they have the time to unload the entire cargo and then start checking every product? So what the counterfeit guys do is when they've gone to sometimes China to have these things counterfeited, then they come in, they hide, they put some of the originals on top of the fake, and then they hide a lot of the fake somewhere so that if you at all you want to check, by the time you are done checking, you would be exhausted. So these custom officers, at best, if they check, they'll just, you know, use the scanning machine to just check for the radio frequency or the QR scanner, check one place, check another place, and then so it's pass. But what has just been released is a bunch of fakes that are entering the country. And there's nothing that they can do about it because they are understaffed for the job. And even if they are much, do you know how many people you need to employ for you to be able to check through every product? So even technology in this case seem not to be like an efficient solution, but it is some sort of solutions anyway, but you know, it's not too effective. And maybe if there is a way or a technology that collects a product straight from the original manufacturers in some sort of real time computing, so that the country where that product or that cargo is headed they will be seeing, they will be seeing the movement from that from one spot to the next country. I don't know if you get what I'm saying. If there is any way they can create such kind of technology, then that could be a way out. But then again, what are the means of transportation? If the means of transportation is the sea, sometimes network gets, you know, there are some hazard areas in the sea where you have pirates, you know, waiting to take over the next ship and take over the products. So, and sometimes you might lose a network in such areas. You know, if you are going by land, it's a much longer route process. Air, maybe air might be a solution, but then again, there are a lot of costs that goes with, you know, transportation by air. So these are the issues around that. But I mean, those technology measures surely at least some sort of improvement. Then another thing they can do is they need to focus on sensitizing or incentivizing consumers. So imagine if you want to buy a McLean. Now we call every toothpaste McLean in Nigeria. Anyways, so imagine if you want to buy a toothpaste, right? And then you know that after buying, you can just scan the QR code on the toothpaste. And once you scan it and it confirms, I said original, immediately you get, let's say, a 100 naira or 200 naira recharge card. People will be doing that. And people will be able to call out the fake. But then again, this would be dependent on whether the price of the original is affordable. If it is affordable, then people will call out the fake and say, you people are selling fake, but this is not a take. I want the original. And that is a way, you know, that the consumers themselves will be the one protecting the business brands. But then I realized sometimes that could come at a very heavy cost for the manufacturing company. Imagine if you have to give out 200 naira recharge card for how many thousands of people. But yeah, these are the ways we can curtail counterfeit.
So I do agree with everything you've said. And one thing that stood out for me was, you know, talking about balancing prices. So currently, I don't know if you've seen this post where people are talking about the price of Augmentin moving from 4.5 to 17,000. And I think just yesterday in the office, my colleague was saying someone she knew just bought Augmentin for 22,500. And I'm wondering, how would an ordinary man who actually needs it be able to afford 22,000? 22,000 is someone's salary. 22,000 is someone's child's school fees. Some people can't even get up to that amount at the end of the day. Then again, I was looking at it from the point of when you mentioned the government, you know, engaging other jurisdictions. I was looking at it from the compulsory licensing angle. Would that also help with counterfeiting, or do you think it's a bad idea to start with?
Well, the problem with compulsory licensing is when the government decides to, you know, use that magic wand to better the lives of their people, definitely it might help reduce cost, right? But the problem again is most of these manufacturers don't want governments to, you know, to take a bite at that power. As soon as any government uses compulsory licensing, immediately it becomes a talk in the international space. And then they begin to, you know, call out the country for being anti-intellectual property. And then they begin to call out all the treaties and, you know, complying and all that. And then start looking for other economic sanctions that could impact on that country. So you see that happened for COVID-19, you know. At the time, Africans were almost begging for this thing. Can you send us some vaccines? Our people are dying, you know. And for me, when that was happening, I was like, what the hell? Why do you need some sort of authority? Why are you begging? Just create some compulsory licensing if you have other alternative measures. I'll make use of those, because it's, you know, between it's a life and death situation, really. And not until so many talks, you know, and during the process of all those international talks, people were dying, of course. And not until then, before they now started and said, okay, let us for now give a temporary access for, you know, countries. And even after that, there was still some delay in the delivery of these vaccines, you know, not to, you know, let's not even go into the argument of whether, you know, the vaccines in the first place were, you know, were real and needed or not. But that's just a situation of, you know, what goes on. So it's not easy for any government to actually take on that provision of compulsory licensing. And if that even happens, what can probably be the effect? The effect would be, because they have control, right? If you do a compulsory license, all I need to do is to make sure that my goods don't get to your jurisdiction. Because before you are doing compulsory license, your compulsory license power is in your jurisdiction, right? So I'll just make sure that my goods never get to your jurisdiction. So that would then force the government and that country to now start looking at actually patronizing counterfeit. And when that happens, so if they create the compulsory license, it will be more of promotion of counterfeit. And that is another thing any government wants to be associated with, because that would, you know, ruin your international reputation.
Well, I mean, doesn't that mean that IP doesn't have a conscience, you know? But then how can consumers and businesses, government, the civil society work together to raise awareness and foster a culture of respect for intellectual property, especially within Nigeria?
Yeah, like I told you, Rita, every awareness campaign, sensitization campaign, I've been in much of this, and I can, at the risk of sounding pessimistic, I don't see the fruit really of such. I mean, it helps to just create that awareness, you know, and but you see, even people who I've seen people who are champions of counterfeits who use counterfeit products. So sometimes, to be fair, they don't know, right? Mm. They don't know. And because these guys are getting better and better, right? I went to the market one time and I saw this shirt, TM Lewin. And I usually like TM Lewin for official shirts, office shirts. So I just saw TM Lewin. So I just bought. I said, oh, TM Lewin. And guess what? They sold it at a high price, not as high as it would have been, right? But it was a bit close to the product price. But it was a counterfeit, and I never knew. And you can imagine a whole brand expert. I didn't think
that. I was imagining a whole expert.
Do you understand? Because I was in a hurry. It was at night. And if I don't get that cloth that day, then I will not be able to use it for the uniform we need to use it for the next morning. It was a Friday night. So I just took it. And it was in a boutique, funny enough. So it wasn't in railroads. I didn't go to railroads. It was in a boutique. So I took the TM Lewin. I paid for it. And then I went home. The next morning, when the day was bright, my eye cleared. And then I saw in the TM Lewin, the win, the last spelling of the win was not properly spelt, you know? And that was when I knew that, whoa, this I bought a fake, you know? But it was not properly spelt. It was not the original TM Lewin. The win ended up with W-I-N-E or W-Y-N-E or something like that. And it was very painful, you know, because if it was a counterfeit I bought, then I should have bought it for a much cheaper price. Do you understand my pain? So,
It's the audacity for you. Eh?
It's the audacity. And then they brought this in a boutique. So, in a well-known boutique for that matter. And I was like, what the hell? So you see that even going to saying you are going, maybe sensitization, don't go on the roadside, that doesn't work. Let's say you're going to the main boutiques or the popular supermarkets that have, you know, that are even government compliant and all those stuff. You still see counterfeits in those shelves, you know. You still see counterfeits. Even those buying never knew or they may not know. They are even buying it for a high amount, thinking they are buying the original thing. And you would just be surprised. So
some don't even care. Some don't even care. That's the thing.
I mean, it's also a lot of trouble trying to also see whether it's original or not and all that. It's also a lot of trouble that some people don't really care, really. So on that sensitization, awareness, we can continue to do that, at least so that people would know, right? Whether it will now change the tide is a different ball game.
I mean, someone can attend the sensitization program, go back to their squad and say, okay, they've caught up with us, so let's look for a more...
they also attend these programs.
Let's call it legal money right now. I don't know, but I think that would be like the right term for this, because they're really smart. If you look at what they are doing, they are actually really smart to sit down and think of, okay, put this, remove this, add this, like seriously. It takes a creative person to be able to do what they actually do.
They are creative. Make no mistakes around it, Rita. They are very creative. And which brings me to one of the recommendations I have made before, that these business manufacturers, right? Perhaps, I mean, it's something, maybe I'm speaking what do you call it now? The forbidden. So, but maybe they need to collaborate with these guys, right? They need to find a way to collaborate with these guys. Maybe their cost of production, they can't do much about it. And so it makes everything very high. But if you collaborate with these guys, you can find a way to protect the quality and still earn money from it. That is why we have commercialization options like franchises, licensing. Do you understand where I'm going? So,
yeah.
So look at the story of Gucci. The popularity of Gucci today was not from the original source. That people love Gucci so much that Gucci became a brand to reckon with was not from their marketing efforts. Or so much of behind their, yes, it was quality product. Yes, it was a high thing to behold. But people didn't give a hoot back then. When Gucci became a thing was when the counterfeit started reproducing Gucci, making it from less costly a process, and then distributing it so massively that people started falling in love with Gucci, and everybody wants to buy Gucci. Now, Gucci now found out that, the directors found out that their name is now well known. There's so much Gucci everywhere, and the brand is well loved, but they are not seeing the money. and they didn't do this much marketing. So what did they do? They eventually found out where the leak came from. Of course, it was a theft of trade secret. They found out where the leak came from. And what did they do? Did they try to shut those people down? They didn't. Look at the wisdom behind it. And I think they tried acting that movie on Netflix. What's the name of that movie?
Are you talking about House of Gucci?
Yes, House of Gucci, acted by Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. Yes. So So, and at the end of the day, what they allowed those guys to try, they just allowed them to continue in the market. Guess what? Because it was bringing more reputation. It was a cheap brand promotion for them, right? And they used it to their own advantage. Eventually, they had to strike some sort of deal or relationship anyways. But that is the point. So these manufacturers have to find a way to actually collaborate with these guys so everybody can be a part and then save the community at large.
I don't know, you follow this guy on TikTok and Instagram that asks people what you do for a living, and then he asks you what's your best luxury brand. And when people mention that they don't like Gucci, he's like, why Gucci? You know, he's kind of shocked, like, why people don't like Gucci, you know. But moving on to something that I think we both have a similarity on, which is geographical indication. So I'm going to ask you now, how does geographical indication, that's GI, and traditional knowledge enhance the and diversity of local products such as the Adire or herbs or herbal medicines?
Things that we have in Nigeria.
Yes. Let me start with what you said last. You see, eventually people started saying they don't like Gucci, right? Why? Because you see, everything that you overdo always has its own effect. So the fakes are so commonalized and trivialized in the market that everybody now know that it's shitty to have Gucci, and you can never be sure whether you have the original thing, right? So maybe that's what has happened. And that GI, that is where GI even comes in, right?
Okay.
So, assuming, well, and what is GI? GI is just a mark, right? It's just like a mark that is appended on goods, telling the world that, hey, this is coming from the right source. It has been checked based on standards, and it is perfect, and it is made by the original makers that are well known for this thing. That's basically what GI is, a sign. It identifies or indicates the goods or services as originating from a specific locality or region, and showing that the quality or reputation or character of that good is essentially tied to that place. So it is not the goods themselves. GI is not concerned about the goods themselves. It's not the goods that are protected. It is just that sign. So for instance, imagine if we start packaging. Of course, we've started packaging Ijebu Garri now. You go to supermarket, you see a well-packaged Ijebu Garri. But there's no GI on it. So maybe somebody from the East now, Anambra, can just come and package Ijebu Garri and say, oh, Ijebu Garri. Maybe he is the one that did the Garri. But could he have really done that Garri in those locally well-made known ways that the Ijebu people would have done it? Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's not the right source. It's not coming from the right source. And just the same thing, similar to maybe the Banga stew. Maybe somebody from Lagos or Ogun State can go and make and say, oh, Ofako. Will it really be Ofako? You know?
It's also kind of like how we say if Bole, it's not from Port Harcourt, it's not original Bole. I feel like
exactly.
It's not
Port Harcourt Bole. Exactly. Because and these are very, very, you know, little. So what the mark now does is to indicate, it passes through standard measures and processes, right? And then that mark is now affixed on that product, showing that, oh, this is the one coming from here. This is the original source. And what it the impact it has is that because everybody already knows that quality and reputation associated with that particular area or community. If they know that this is the original thing coming from it, just as the sign would show, there is more likely going to be patronage. People would buy it and beat their chest and say, oh, I bought the original thing. And that is what we have been discussing. It's a way. GI is actually a way to reduce counterfeit. That is if the counterfeit people don't go and fake the GI and put on it. but not really. It's actually one of the tools, right? To reduce counterfeit. And I'll tell you, you said, how can GI and traditional enhance the quality of local products? It will not enhance the quality. What it will do is to... No, it doesn't enhance the quality. What it simply actually do is to testify. It's like a testimonial of the quality.
Okay, praise the Lord. Praise the Lord.
So the product itself, the community itself, for instance, the makers of the Adire, they have to all come together and know themselves and say, see, we are the ones who really know this stuff. We are the ones this traditional knowledge was handed over to. Can we all agree that we must always make this product this way? We must almost always keep to the standard. And this, our GI, will now help us to testify to the world that, yes, this is coming from us and no other person. And this is why GI is not actually, some depending on the laws, but they frown at licensing GI. You can't license the GI for another community to go and use, you know, because they do not know the know-how, that skill, that process for that particular product. And so it will just kill the quality. And that is why GI also is not an individual thing. It's a community thing, you know, all the people in that area. So they are the ones that benefit from it. And, you know, so what it then does outside that community is it then becomes like a badge saying, oh, we testify that this is where, this is from the original source. You can take Ijebu Gari and you are safe. It will give you the original test anywhere. This Ofaako is from so-so place. This jollof rice is from the original, although jollof rice will now be the entire Nigeria.
No, you know, you will have variation. You have peppered jollof rice and you have non-peppered. Yeah, you know when you peppered jollof rice.
That's true, Rita. That's true. Yeah. Because I recall my mom used to make this. She calls it what's the name of this oil? This red oil palm rice. Oil. Yes, she called it palm oil rice, you know. And when I eat a palm oil rice and I eat it elsewhere, the difference is always clear, you know.
Ehenna, so, it must be clear. It must be clear.
True. So that's what GI does eventually. And if the world knows, then we can now begin to protect our products outside Nigeria and even within Nigeria, you know. So that's the advantage.
So, you know, I was thinking, because you it's like you like Ofaako. Yeah, I also like it. It's not something that I get to, you know, get access to all the time. But I was thinking of this conversation coming from, you know, where the community decides to have like a limited edition of their collections or their products. You know, so if we say within 3 months you have access to this, so that counterfeiters will not, you know, beat them to think of something very innovative to make sure that this product is available post 3 months when people are going back into their black quality. There's also this page I follow on Instagram called Insider Business. I think it's Inside Business or something like that. It gives you I enjoy seeing their short videos, give you insight of how certain communities have preserved traditions in producing certain things, how they make their money. You're hearing 900 years, 400 years. I'm like,
So if you are this invested that you're passing information from generation to generation, what are we actually doing here in Nigeria that we can't generate revenue from our traditional knowledge, our know-hows, our uniqueness, you know, just making sure that you preserve whatever confidential information that you have within your circle and make sure that I really don't know. Like whenever I watch, I'm always amazed. I'm like, okay, when are you guys actually going to feel like a Nigerian community that has done the same thing, you know, documentation and all of those things.
Tell me about it. Look at China. Look at Japan. Oh my word. If they tell you how many years, how many centuries they've kept certain cultures or certain knowledge within, do you understand? And that is why do you think the world is always crazy about Japan, Chinese tea and all that? You know, the next thing you see ginseng in the tea, you say, oh, that's the tea I want, you know? And guess what? I think in the recently I was at the South African Nigerian Chamber of Commerce, and we had this I had a friend from Cameroon who came in, and she was like, in our hotel, she noticed anytime she comes to Lagos that when they serve her tea, they bring Lipton, this foreign Lipton, and she gets very angry. She tells them to take it away. I'm like, why? She said, that do you know that tea is one of the easiest things to make? Are you telling me that Nigerians don't have trees?
And we have.
Okay. These are just looking for one of the trees and then just pack it into this thing, and that's tea, and start selling it. And who knows, it may have some medicine. And I was like, wow. So how come? I was not thinking. She was asking that. I have not seen any Nigerian made tea. I was like, I'm sure there would be, because I used to know there's this indigenous company that creates. It's just that they are not well known, right?
No, there's one that always crosses my timeline on Instagram. Then there's this. I think it was on Twitter. I saw this as well. There's this particular community in Taraba State. They say. I haven't tasted it. They say they have the best tea in Nigeria. And I'm like, you guys are sitting on the... What are you people doing? I think that was during the pandemic. Not during the lockdown. A lot of information is just flying left.
Flying around.
So I was like, you people are sitting on money. And they're like, oh, it has... Like, I mean, you also need to consider...
That's another thing. You see, to have something is one thing. Promotion is another. And I think that's where intellectual property and marketing meets, right? And GI and marketing also meet. I think these people need to find a way, or maybe a government needs to create some sort of promotion agency, right? That is of the government. And they'll do their duty will be to be finding out these old things in communities, archiving them and exposing them to the world, both in Nigeria and outside, so that people know. You know, so that people know. I never knew of this Taraba thing you're saying now.
Oh, I mean, the pictures were lovely. Like, it's like a whole hectare of tea that they're sitting on in Taraba. I'm trying to remember the name of the other Nigerian. I think is it Ahmed or something. I can't remember. Maybe if I see it offline, I'll just screenshot it and send to you. But it was really interesting.
And guess what? Have some medicinal benefits.
It does. It kind of reminds me of the story of the South African, I think the Ruby's tea fight that they had for years.
Rooibos
tea. Yeah, so.
And the Rooibos tea is one thing. That same element in the Rooibos is now being used by big pharmaceuticals for other some sort of cures or medicines, you know, or tablets that they want to make. IP is money.
I swear. Anyways, we're wrapping up in a few in a few minutes. What are the trends or risks that are out there that you see within counterfeiting, piracy, and cultural heritage? I particularly have an interest in cultural heritage and tourism because I'm currently working on something like that too. Just share with us. I mean, I need to learn from my next, but this is the only opportunity I can pick your brain right now, you know?
Rita, you're also an expert.
Anyways, it's me now.
I'll just say, well, In terms of counterfeiting, the trend now is that it's rife in the technology space. And the reason is because maybe in the technology space, every tech kind of needs one or two existing technology to survive. So you see a whole lot of both reverse engineering of codes, and you see a lot of cross collaboration. Many are not collaborating, they are stealing it. And the open license of many people are not keeping to the terms of the open license of the Creative Commons. So that's it's a very big one on its own. And people are just creating different shares of the same technology, without necessarily having the consent or license that it deserves. So that is one big thing that is happening. And then with the whole AI, ChatGPT, form of the AI and everything is just getting more crazy by the day. So most of those of us who use ChatGPT, anything you give it, you give in, gets stored into ChatGPT. They don't they get it gets stored, and then they, of course, they will give you an output that you deserve, and in some cases you then own the output that is given to you. But you have also lost something. You see recently out there some employees from Samsung, how to use ChatGPT, and in the process they disclosed some serious trade secrets, and that these are the problems in that area. The piracy has taken a new form, really. And in the space of copyright, it is now mostly digital, it is now mostly digital, and the level of the flagrant abuse of copyright in our today's world is just, and it's so crazy that people just copy anything from anywhere. They don't credit, they don't give reference, they don't, people are just stealing thoughts anyhow and pretending that it's theirs, So you go on LinkedIn too, you see people posting another people's thought as if it's theirs. It's just crazy. Nobody's respecting that space. And that on the new Copyright Act has made some provisions around, digital infringements. So most of it will be captured in there. And the provision on the takedown process, I think it's although it's not new in the world, but I think this is the first time Nigeria is adopting it. So it's an improvement. In terms of cultural heritage, I think one of our major setbacks is because we do not have a so to speak, a law on traditional knowledge, right? So of our heritage out there is exposed. It is exposed. And it is sad because I see the kind of improvements, the kind of money that should be coming out of it. And the trends out there is that people are now investing in their traditional knowledge and heritage to, boost their economy. South Africa did this, right? And it boosted the economy to a large extent. You see, Ethiopia, they are doing this. It's boosting that economy to a large extent. Ghana now taking hint, they are on the way to that. Nigeria, it seems we are crawling yet.
I think I'll pay for Nigeria. Lagos is leading because, like I stated, I have a personal interest on cultural heritage conversation because, and because of my conversation, I discovered that Lagos is the only state that has like a law. It doesn't really co cover cultural heritage. Like when the drafters were writing the law, they did not expressly define cultural heritage, but they had like a preservation of listed sites law and some other laws as well, preserving the Yoruba language and all, but that's just Lagos. Then you see a bit of Benin in relation to their bronze and artifacts, but no laws. Same thing with Delta, but no laws. You know, but so far, I would say Lagos is leading in the conversation when you're talking about cultural heritage. You know,
true, true. And what they've done, if you notice, is I think, and it's not just only in the maybe in terms of some local products. It's also even in the medicinal space. So. It was Lagos who came together. I think a group of herbal, some I've forgotten their name now, but they have a list, you know, where they did some research, even from the Lagos indigenous communities, to find out in certain medicinal skills or traditional knowledge, and they documented them, you know, and that's where you have something like the Agbo. You know, the Agbo used to cure malaria and some other diseases, you know?
Yeah. So,
yeah, they have that documented. I'm not sure if other states, like you said, have that documented. But Benin, I think they are much more concerned with the artifacts, you know?
There's money there. I mean, also the digital museum that someone created during the NFT craze.
there is money. But I think the Benin culture even goes way beyond the artifact, but I mean one step at a time, right? So that's that. And the East, sadly, is sleeping, because I know the East has a lot of medicinal plants, right? And also curative measures or knowledge that if not been able to document, and that's a bit of a worry. My mom was telling me a story of how sometime when they were young, someone had cancer, and they had of course, during that period, we still have some of the whites, you know, here, and they are mostly the doctors. And then they said, you know, they diagnosed the person of cancer and like, that sadly, this person's leg will need to be amputated and all that. And it was a medicine, a plant that one of the is it DBA now or so? Yes, eventually. And that thing was gone. And so why she was telling me that story, because the friend came to visit. So she was not telling me the story of that friend. And of course, she was way older. That's after many years. She has not died. She's so, you know, healthy and moving around. And I was like, it just came to my mind and said, what if that plant and the processes was known?
Do you know R&D facility would have been created?
Do you know how much people have invested or wasted, or how many problems there have been because of cancer? You know, maybe that would have been a cure, and it would have been said that, you know, Nigerians, you know, came up with a cure or that particular
community. Will they let us admit it? Will they let us own it?
the intellectual property politics is another discussion for another day.
No. that one day. But
still talking of cultural heritage also, I think it behooves us, right, to start seeing. I was at a conference hosted by the Nollywood guys, and everybody was in the room, and I said we need to start looking at promoting ourselves by ourselves. People should stop thinking selfishly. In fact, there should be no script that is written and, you know, produced out there. That is one of the vetting criteria would be, where is the cultural heritage content? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Be some sort of, even if it's a line, even if it's like a worker pass, do you understand? Some sort of heritage. That's where Nollywood, tourism, cultural heritage, there is a link around all these things. We should be able to. It's not every time we travel to Dubai, we travel to this, we travel. No.
Can you travel to Dubai right now? Yeah, if you're not married, can you travel?
Can we begin to look inwards? Can somebody in a script take 1 minute or 1 second to do the argument or talk about jollof rice and tell the world who will be watching that movie why the Nigerian jollof rice is different?
Do you understand?
Can somebody at least talk about that so person? It was agbo that they use. It must not necessarily be magic all the time. What about the agbo? What about the pepper? There was one Nigerian movie I watched that I've forgotten the name. Richard Mofetta Minjo acted that movie. He was sick, and the lady in question brought up pepper soup made from a mother recipe. I was telling him that pepper soup can actually help in healing fever and all that. That was very educative, and I loved that. We need much more. Of course, the film was talking about something else, but in the process, they were able to show the Nigerian cultural, heritage right there. And these are the things we need to reflect in our movies. These are ways because right now it's the Nigerian music and film industry that is really out there.
Fashion, a little bit of fashion.
Yes, and also fashion. Yes, fashion is out there. It's just that the fashion space has been bastardized. Sorry to say, because there's a lot of copying. There's a lot of copying up and down. Nobody's creative, so a lot of you see people copying each other, and then also going outside. Outside people will copy it. They will rebrand it and resell to. I don't know.
And then element of pricing as well.
It's crazy. The fashion space is just, and I think it was because of a lack of knowledge, early lack of knowledge on designs. Because if they knew that, maybe it wouldn't have gotten this bad.
There's hope.
There is.
Okay. So in wrapping up, what would you say, what's your final thoughts on this conversation?
Yeah. So my final thought is that, okay, I would say Nigeria is blessed, right? And I know we hear this all the time. Mm-hmm. When we say Nigeria is blessed with resources, so natural resources and all that, I know we hear this all the time. But I'm saying it now from a very deep, deep realization and deep level of experience. Being, an IP expert that plays the middleman in these things. We are blessed with enough resources, enough intellectual property assets, are lying, wasting. Right, and the first thing is that every person, every industry has to sit. Every industry, they have to sit up, they have to call IP experts to educate them, and they have to, from after that education or training, they have to develop some sort of policy, especially about intellectual property, how they want to use intellectual property to change their space, their industry. I'm talking of the food people industry, the textile industry. Do you understand? Everybody needs to do that. That way, they will carry everybody in their space along. They will have that sensitization, and that way they can curb counterfeits and pirates. To a large extent. When they're able to do this, they would also automatically generate a lot of income for them. I know we don't have a GI law right now, but there are other means we can protect these communities or these industry players through have this certification, trademarks, and all that. So we can begin to do this, and then begin to have that conversation also with government to create some, already there is already some sort of standard measures that can be employed using the Standard Organization of Nigeria, as well as the Nigeria Promotion Council. So these people can be used and utilized, and we can use it to develop these industries, make more money for these people, and at a larger extent, better Nigeria.
Fantastic conversation and final thoughts. Thank you so much, Ifeanyi, for spending your day with IP Series. I hope you had a blast as much as I did, despite all the network glitches. But yeah, thank you so much for stopping by. And,
thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
That's all for today's episode of IP Series. I hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to contact us at ipseriesinfo@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Jollof Radio, AfriPod, Amazon Music, Spotify for Podcasters, and any other podcast platforms you can think of to get notified of our latest episode. Thank you once again, IP friends, for listening, and stay tuned for more interesting topics on intellectual property. Goodbye.